Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Westwood for another edition of UCLA Bruin Talk. I'm Dave Marcus, pleased as always to be seated next to Allison Taylor. We have a real interesting show for you today. You know, it's one thing to have one of the top athletic programs in the nation. It's another thing to communicate the message about those programs. We're going to get inside that process. And then we're going to talk to one of the top players on this year's number one ranked women's volleyball team.
Before we meet our first guest, let's take a look at the upcoming events.
Those of you who have viewed this show and have followed the Bruins' progress on UCLABruins.com have noticed that it's a more aggressive approach to communication with the fans this year. Our first guest has a lot to do with that. He's the new Executive Director for Athletic Communications, Nick Amazzalorso. Welcome to Westwood and welcome to Bruin Talk.
No, it's great to be here and share a little bit about what we plan to do this year and beyond with all the fans out there.
The website in particular and the Twitter links and the Facebook links, a lot of things have really started to come into fruition. Tell us, number one, about what you've had a chance to do in your 2 months on campus and what your plans are for the future.
Well, I think it's been a process that was outlined a little bit to me before I even got here. In the interview process, Dan Guerrero and Mark Harlan were very specific about raising the social media and online profile for the department. So within a week, we were able to hire two website writers that will be doing features that will focus mostly on Olympic sports and while also highlighting some of the other things that don't make the sports pages around our bigger programs. And the second part was also bringing in a director of new media, a familiar face to a lot of people in the athletic department, Liza David, who was the men's soccer sports information director and also worked on the women's basketball side. So in concert with bringing on those website writers, we've also tried to up our presence on Facebook and Twitter and also do some new things that haven't been done before. And I'm sure we'll get into those later in the show.
Nick, you come to UCLA with a wealth of experience. CAA, one of the biggest agencies in the world, is where you came from, and you've got a background as a sports broadcaster. All began when you were a student at Maryland. Tell us how you got into this business.
Yeah, well, actually, it probably goes back even to before college. There are tapes of me from when I was about 6 years old, doing play-by-play of Yankee games into this little, you know, actually pretty big recorder at the time, and wanting to do something to do with sports at the time and kind of following that passion through when I got to the University of Maryland, as you mentioned. I was sports director of the campus radio station for 2 years, worked very closely with their sports information department, and then worked in broadcasting professionally for 2 years right out of college, and then made the transition to public relations through some connections I had made in college and ended up, you know, with the Galaxy here in Los Angeles in 2003. Was there for the opening of the Home Depot Center and really able to position that club as best we could going forward. Was there until they won the championship in 05 and realized that in terms of we had caught lightning in a bottle. This was before David Beckham, so hockey had been on lockout and really were able to maximize the coverage in both English and Spanish language. I'm also fluent in Spanish and worked with that media here in LA, which is obviously very important in this market. And then spent 3 years at an agency in Seal Beach by the name of Leader Enterprises, We're responsible for doing a lot of the PR around all of DirecTV sports platforms. Also launched something innovative called the OCNN, Ocho Cinco News Network for Motorola. And then after about 3.5 years there, realized that I needed my next challenge. And that just happened to be CAA. It was good to be in that industry. It was on the corporate communications side, which probably prepared me more for what I'm doing today than anything else that I've done. But also realized that after a year, it probably wasn't a long-term place for me, and really looked to get back into college athletics and really thought there could be some thoughtful things that would be done here. And we've begun to do those in the last, as you mentioned, about 6 or 7 weeks.
How do you plan to utilize all of that experience that you just told us about? How are you going to use that to aid the UCLA athletics department?
Well, I think it's a couple things at a time. It's a gradual approach. Really would have loved to have come in here and said, you know, in August and said, here's my 30, 60, 90-day plan. Came in after the Texas football game, so the accelerated focus became football. So right now I'm using actually a lot of what I did at CAA on the other side of this business, where I was responsible for a lot of the messaging around Urban Meyer's resignation from Florida last year. And I was, CAA represents Urban, so I was able to see it from the other side. So I'm now able to position both Rick Neuheisel and Dan Guerrero in the best light going forward for not only themselves but the program. So in the short term, I think I'll be drawing a lot of CAA parallels, but I also can draw on the fact that when I was at the Galaxy, we really ran the public relations department almost as a sports information department. So I'm able to provide guidance to those folks on a day-in, day-out basis as well, while not stepping on their toes because a lot of them are already in season with sports that they would be covering for the university.
One of the features that has started to appear on the UCLA website is the Word from Westwood, which is Dan Guerrero's blog. I think people in LA are not used to athletic directors having blogs and reaching out to really explain things to the community. And there have been a couple big challenges. You mentioned football. After the Arizona game, he had a Word from Westwood out the next day. And obviously that was very important to let people know what the position of the athletic director's office was on the status of things. Tell us about the effort behind getting the Word from Westwood onto the website.
Yeah, I think the Word from Westwood is something that, again, was laid out in the interview process, but probably was accelerated just because of the mere circumstance of where football is right now, but also giving Dan the opportunity to be out in public. It's just one piece of the communication puzzle for Dan. We've done some radio interviews, before that Arizona game. He's done some significant media after football games where maybe he hadn't in the past. But we're taking advantage and we're trying to strike the iron while it's hot and do as best we can with, you know, what Dan has to say, really take a stand, really be topical. There are always going to be detractors, but I always feel that that's the 1 or 2% that you get no matter where you are, especially in a pro sports town. But I think it's really been a good avenue for Dan to express himself and to really also let the coaches know internally in the building, in Morgan Center, how much he really cares about their individual sports.
Dave mentioned the rough outing at Arizona, and obviously there's going to be some negative publicity with that kind of thing. How do you plan now and in the future to mitigate negative publicity surrounding the athletics department?
Well, I think it's, in two words, a proactive approach. I think in the past it's been reactive, and that's not to bash anybody that's been in this department before me. They've all had single sport responsibilities. I have no responsibilities to a single sport. Therefore, I have the ability to go out and do the messaging on a regular basis, to coordinate with coaches and administrators and make sure everybody's on the same page. And maybe even, you know, once we get past a certain point this year when we're in the sports arena for basketball and we're at a point where we're comfortable to really be proactive and to sell feature stories and things like that, not only internally on our website, which we've seen increase, but also work with papers on certain stories, whether it be the retirement of Al Skates coming up or other good stories that are worthy of coverage that newspapers really may have overlooked in the past. So being able to focus on certain things about that. One such example is we're hosting a men's basketball kickoff luncheon, but it's not going to involve Ben Howland or Dan Guerrero. It's going to involve Mark Harlan and Scott Mitchell, who are going to talk about why the Bruin Roadshow came into being, the logistics behind it, what the expectations are, to kind of get the media proactively thinking about those things, where in the past maybe we haven't had the opportunity to do that because we've all been running so fast. and just being able to stay up. So now, you know, keeping ahead as opposed to staying afloat.
You mentioned earlier the Olympic sports at UCLA, which have been the backbone of the nation's most successful overall sports program. Those Olympic sports in the traditional media get a line. You know, the UCLA soccer won 1-0. But the website and the blogs and the Twitter feeds and all that stuff is bringing a higher profile to those Olympic sports. What's the long-term goal to get some more publicity for these sports that are so deserving?
Well, I think it's probably, as you mentioned, a long-term goal. I don't know if it's 2 years away, 3 years away. I think eventually we want to get to the point where we are our own news bureau and breaking news on a regular basis, you know, whether it be, you know, as you mentioned, coverage of those Olympic sports or something around football or basketball. Kind of depends. We'll see. The position that I am currently in was modeled after a position at the University of Miami. And obviously they've had a lot of negative publicity in the last 6 months, but they've also been able to mitigate it by doing a lot of the work themselves and not necessarily cooperating with the Miami Herald. Not saying we're not going to cooperate with the LA Times. That's not at all on my agenda here. But also, if there are certain things that we can take in-house and really raise the profile of in-house, that will help recruiting efforts, will help general awareness of this campus, will help any number of factors, we'll be willing to do that. It's just a matter of when, not if.
You came out of an environment in professional sports with the Galaxy, and now you're in an environment of college sports. What are the biggest differences between coming onto a campus and working out there in the professional ranks dealing with media?
Well, I think first and foremost, the coach interaction is about the same on the professional side than it would be at the collegiate side, especially with the level of coaches that we have here at UCLA. In terms of dealing with the media, there are certain things you can do and can't do on both sides, kind of navigating those paths right now. The media is very much, you know, very focused on UCLA. We're treated here in this market like a professional sports team. So there isn't a ton of difference. There are certain things that you can and can't do with regards to privacy of student athletes and things like that, especially on this being a state university. And we had to establish an injury policy early in my tenure here on the football side. And there was a lot of pushback from the media, but I also realized that, you know, it was a good policy to protect both Coach Neuheisel and his student athletes. And if we hadn't put that in place, there were going to be holes that the media could potentially exploit. Policies and procedures are probably the biggest difference between the pros and college, especially at a state university, and it's navigating what we can and can't do here that's been a huge challenge as well.
During your tenure here, I know UCLA has created a new Twitter account, UCLA Game Day, that gives up-to-time updates of all the games going on, including the Olympic sports. Can you tell us a little bit about the rationale behind that and how it's come to fruition?
Well, that was actually something that was in the plans before I got here, but we've kind of expanded it now. Liza David, who I mentioned earlier, is the director of new media, really saw an opportunity to be able to engage with our fans in every sport on a regular basis, and really realized that when things were tweeted, the amount of click-throughs was significantly more than if the stories just appeared on the website. So she decided to do that before I even got here, and then once I started after the Texas game, as I mentioned, we've tried to do it as much as possible. We've tried to encourage our sports information staffers at every venue, when possible, to do it. It's easier to tweet 140 characters than it is to try and write a game story and post it in real time on the website. So it's been very, very helpful. I think our Olympic sports need that and deserve that. They're very successful. We have 3 number one teams in the country as we're taping this. We have a number 2. So the more information we can get out about those sports, the better. So doing it in real time has really been a great tool in terms of fan engagement for us as a department. And as I mentioned, there are other things that we hope to do very, very soon, and whether it be Twitter, Facebook, even other, you know, social media technologies. And we're going to continue to engage the fans as much as possible.
Nick, fascinating. I wish we could go on longer. We hope you'll come back and join us.
Absolutely. I hope I haven't confused too many people out there or gone too long, but I'll take it on a regular basis. If you guys want to do it, I'll bring you through updates and what we're thinking and, you know, what the next thing is for the athletic department as well.
And the good news is you can see the work of the director of new media and the sports information department on the UCLA website at UCLABruins.com. We'll be back in just a few moments after this public service announcement with our next guest.
A trophy can be made just about anywhere. But there's one place where champions are made. UCLA, champions made here.
Hi, and welcome back to UCLA Bruin Talk. It is now time to honor our Student Athlete of the Week. This week, we honor Griffin White of the men's water polo team as our Student Athlete of the Week. For the week of October 10th through the 16th, Griffin was named the UCLA Muscle Milk Student Athlete of the Week for scoring 4 goals in 2 victories over Stanford and Santa Clara. In his last 3 games at the attacker position, White has tallied 7 goals to push his season total to 21. We look forward to more great play from Griffin and the number 1 ranked UCLA men's water polo team. Congratulations, Griffin, and good luck to the rest of the team. If you would like additional information about UCLA athletics, please visit our website at uclabruins.com.
And one of the teams on campus that's number 1 is the women's volleyball team, coming off an incredible weekend where they beat Cal and Stanford on the road, first sweep of the Cardinal in 11 years. And we're pleased to be joined by one of our former student athletes of the week, Bojana Todorovic. Welcome to Bruin Talk.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
The team has to be on an incredible high after completing that road trip.
We definitely were so excited. Obviously, we knew the importance of this weekend because they're both really great teams. They will always step up and play very, very well against us. And they did. It's just, I think we had a new focus coming into this weekend, and we knew, hey, this is something we need to do if we want to really do well in the playoffs.
I think somebody looking from the outside would say, this team has really got it going. How did you get to the point where things are just rolling so well?
It took a lot of work. It's not easy. I mean, I know a lot of things happen behind the scenes that the audience doesn't get to see. But we've been working hard from day one in August when we show up early before everybody for summer camp, for double days, for weights. It's just lots of training and lots of, I guess, sports psychology, definitely, because, you know, sports are really mental in every aspect. You have to be very confident, you have to be sure of yourself, and you have to know that anything is really possible. Just like the Stanford game, you know, we're down both games and we come back and win. That's what it's about.
We've mentioned the season sweep of the Cardinal the first time since 2000. What were the team's emotions after that game? You must have been on such a high.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we it was really, really exciting to get that last point, even though, you know, the third game was a sweep. I think it was like 25-10 or so. It's such a relief to know, you know what, hey, we did it, and we did it well.
The coach, when you came into school, was Andy Banikowski, and now in his second season, the aforementioned Michael Seely. How would you compare their two coaching styles?
They're very different, both amazing coaches. I think, obviously, the dynamic that they create, both can give amazing results. I feel as though the new coaching staff, we definitely are a little more, if things don't go the right way, you know, we just kind of, we go with it. We adjust, we make it happen. Whereas before it was a little bit more stricter. But I honestly, I think they're both really great experiences to have for a player because, you know how to deal with both, because sometimes you can have a lot of fun and with the team and with the girls, and it's nice to have that atmosphere, but you also need to know, hey, we need to refocus, we need to get serious again, and this is how you do it. So as a player, I think it was very valuable for me to have both coaches.
Bojana, I want to talk to you a little bit about serving, because you're one of the best servers on the team, one of the best in the conference, and it's, I think, a lost art. Tell us about the thought process that goes into working on your service game.
Well, I would tell you everything, but then I would be giving away my secrets.
Yes.
But serving, it's definitely, there's a lot more to it if you put a lot more into it. So as a server, I know some people, they look at their coach. The coach gives them an area. Okay, I want you to serve at this player or serve them short, deep. It's very strategic. And you can just listen to your coach and just put that ball there. But what I tend to do is as I get my signal from my coaches, I really tend to focus on where is that player standing? How deep in the court? Are they looking at me? Are they, you know, is there somebody in front? Are my players in front of them? How can I make this the most difficult serve for them? And it's not always about power. I think that's what some people underestimate about serving. It really isn't. It's about making the ball float. Because as the ball, if it doesn't have any spin on it, as it's coming to you as a passer, it's actually moving in the air side to side. And that makes it extremely difficult to pass. A lot more difficult than a serve that's coming maybe like 60 miles an hour straight at you. In order to pass that, you just put your arms out and there you go.
We've all seen situations where, you know, a team fights back from a deficit and then they get a side out and the serve goes into the tape or sails beyond the line. How hard is it to control your emotions and think strategically when you've made this kind of comeback?
It is difficult. It is very difficult just because I think the easiest time to play volleyball is when you're not thinking, when you're just out there just going, and it's almost an automatic mechanism. But serving-wise, my coach is definitely, because I have missed a couple serves out of a timeout, which you don't want to do. And I don't think the timeouts affect me, really. It's just that I'm still going hard and serving as hard as I can in order to score, help my team score a point. It's just that it happens to be right after a timeout. So I guess I've had to adjust a little bit to, I guess, ease down my serve just to make sure it goes in after a timeout, because it does help the team keep momentum when we have a run off serving.
With the renovation of Pauley Pavilion under construction, you guys have been playing in Collins Court in the John Wooden Center. Tell us a little bit about how that atmosphere has affected you. I know they've been turning people away from the games. That's got to make you feel good as an athlete.
Yeah, it really does. The crowd and the energy that the crowd brings really does help put you in the moment. And I think volleyball is about that. Volleyball is about playing in the moment because everything is happening so fast. The ball only contacts your arms for a split second, and it has to happen so perfectly so that it goes to the position that you want it to go to. So being in the moment is really, really important. And I think the energy of the crowd when we're playing, being able to actually hear what the cheers are that the crowd is picking up on, it definitely gets you going and helps us get into that moment. And playing in Pauley was amazing. It really was. It's just that it is so huge that even if we get a lot of people in, you know, there's a lot of missing seats in between. So it almost seems like, oh, there's no one there. And I think the best athletes aren't affected by that. And most of my teammates, I know, when we start playing, you kind of get into this bubble where nothing can really affect you. Which is why, you know, we can have people heckling behind us and saying whatever they say, and it really won't affect you because you're so focused on your goal. But definitely in between the points when, you know, it gets quiet or momentum starts to change for a couple silly plays, for example, it definitely helps to have the crowd with you.
Yeah. You've talked about how your greatest success comes when you're not really thinking, but it takes a lot of practice and a lot of maturity to get to that stage. How different is your outlook on the game now than when you were a freshman?
Oh, it's day and night. Honestly, I think I came in not realizing how much strategy there is to the game, because that's what I did. I played really in the moment, and I just kind of went for it. But then when I started to slow down my thinking a little bit, I realized, oh, wow, the passers and the blockers, the setters and the hitters, everybody's really, really more connected than anything. And sometimes even one of the most important things I've learned is that sometimes you have to give up a point to get to. You have to have a strategy that maybe doesn't look as presentable as it might be. You might have to send only one blocker over there when there's a big hitter there because there's an even bigger hitter on the other side. You know, you have to give and take in volleyball. And I think our coaching staff, and with the fact that we started watching video for the first time in college, that was amazing because you finally get to see yourself play and other teams play. And you get to see these tendencies that players have. Whereas before, I was just kind of thinking, oh, the ball, oh, they just hit that way and that way and that way. And I wasn't really keeping track of it all. And now, when you look at it as a whole, and obviously statistics help and scouting reports help, you kind of get to realize there is so much to it. There really is. And that's why the coaching is so important.
We've been talking about the incredible success of the team so far this season. How do you yourself and how does the team plan to maintain that level of play through postseason?
I think we definitely, obviously, weight room, practice, the technical things. But I think we do a great job of, I guess, meeting together as a team and talking through some of the issues that we have. We've established the importance of relationships between teammates and coaches and the players. Because if there is miscommunication, we need to figure it out. We need to, it's so much easier to work together with a team when you know you can trust the people right next to you. And you know that, hey, no matter what happens, they've got your back. And I think we've created that type of atmosphere on the team, which really, really helps us get through anything. So as we get into playoffs, I think that'll be something that will give us the edge over some teams.
As the season winds down, Collins Court is selling out. So if you're going to go, you got to get there early. If you can't get in or you live out of the area, the home matches are streamed live on UCLABruins.com. Boyana, thanks for coming in. Congratulations on the great start and best of luck in the rest of the season.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you for joining us on UCLA Bruin Talk. Allison and I will be back next week with another great show. Until then, so long from Westwood.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.